Atheist Nomads, episode 70, news for November 27, 2014. You're not above the law.
Atheist Nomads is proudly brought to you by Archway Hosting. Check out their low-price, full-featured hosting solutions at archwayhosting.com. That's A-R-C-H-W-A-Y hosting.com.
We are the Atheist Nomads, bringing you history, science, politics, religion, and interviews with leaders in the atheist community. Not all those who wander are lost. Welcome to another episode of Atheist Nomads. This is episode number 70. I am Dustin, and joining me as always is Wesley.
And isn't it a lovely day?
Yes, it is. It is. We are doing back-to-back recording.
Yeah.
So, yes, after a full day of work, we're both doing 3 to 4 hours of recording.
Yeah. Don't get me wrong. The interview was a lot of fun.
Yes, it was.
Holy shit. Wow. Yeah. I went to sleep last night at like 3, woke up with my boss calling me at 8, where are you? No reason, just couldn't sleep. I don't know. Fuck it.
God damn.
Yeah.
God damn.
I hate day shift. Anyways.
Oh, good news for me is Lauren found a temp job that may turn permanent.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, a lot better than
the other place.
Just doing retail. It'd be back doing medical billing.
Oh,
her
that could
actual
be fun.
Specialty.
Nice.
Yeah. Happy Thanksgiving, everyone.
Yeah. Happy fucking Turkey Day.
Yeah.
So I know me and Meredith will be down with Sam and Becky from Ask an Atheist, and just like a bunch of us orphans will be down there, like deep frying a turkey and bringing bunches of side dishes and just munching and watching really shitty sci-fi, I'm sure.
Nice.
Yeah. How about you?
We've invited people over. I'm not sure exactly how many are coming, but there'll be at least 6-7 people joining us for Thanksgiving dinner.
So pretty much the same thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Nice. Okay. Well, we got Tacoma and Boise kind of sewn up then. Sounds good.
And I am drinking Gilt, a Belgian coffee porter, ale with Doma coffee from Selkirk Abbey Brewing Company in Post Falls, Idaho. At a modest 6.3% alcohol.
So, beer, a beer ale, beer coffee.
Yes. Huh. With the a picture of a angel passed out over a very short column. Corinthian column, I believe.
Okay.
Half Corinthian. Okay. It's only got the swirl to the top. I believe there was a style name for that, which I'm not recalling. And I am too lazy right now to Google it. I started this beer at the start of the interview.
Oh, shit.
And had a beer before
that. You should
be
done by now.
I've got about 150 milliliters left of it.
Yeah, I'm American.
Got a little bit left.
Okay.
Got it in a Chimay glass.
I'm not smart. I'm just American, man. 150.
Talking about Americans who aren't smart, the frickin' Ferguson grand jury.
Holy shit, what the fuck is up with that? I expected it, but holy shit.
I actually didn't. They're a grand jury. Their job is to indict. For a prosecutor to be bringing a case to grand jury means they have enough evidence.
Dunk-ish.
Yeah, that means they have enough evidence to have a case. The grand jury is really just a rubber stamp to make sure that the DA isn't on crack. And they took 3 months. My mom was on a grand jury once. She served for a week. I think she went through 20 cases.
Wow.
This grand jury took 3 months to go through one, while the DA presented both sides of the argument and the entire case. DAs typically only present a little bit of the evidence they have for their side, enough to show that there's probable cause, that there is a case, and they get the frickin' indictment. The fact that they didn't get an indictment, and that this grand jury was such a frickin' travesty. Most trials don't take 3 months.
It was an indictment on the grand jury that they did not indict.
Oh, no, it's an indictment on the frickin' DA. He didn't want an indictment.
Mm.
There's a legal saying that if you want, you can indict a ham sandwich.
Okay.
It's not hard to get an indictment if you want a frickin' indictment. Obviously, he didn't. I am not surprised that they burned down, what's the count? I think 12 buildings.
Wow.
Two cop cars, damaged quite a few others. If it hadn't been for the fact that the police and National Guard had every government building and other critical piece of infrastructure barricaded, they probably would have burned down the frickin' courthouse and police station.
Fuck.
And if they had, I would have had a hard time saying anything against that. Instead, they looted and burned gas stations and the liquor store. And, of course, that also launched protests in a number of other cities, Oakland, California, Seattle, New York, just to name a few. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if this starts a full-on race war.
Well, maybe it'll finally get to the point where people, like, realize that there's still an actual fucking problem. Maybe it'll wake some white people up.
Well, a good place to start would be that having DAs policing the police is a bad frickin' idea. It's a serious conflict of interest. The DAs get their cases from the police.
Yeah?
The DA is effectively, and the police department, are effectively one and the same. They're just different arms of the same beast. It seriously needs to be the state or federal government policing the police. And somebody needs to be policing the police. Because if you've got a group of people that are above the law, who are unindictable, let alone unconvictable, who can willy-nilly go around and shoot people for being, shoot and kill people for being a young black man, and I don't care what the rest of the details are, the officer's testimony, which the defendant testified in the grand jury, that's unheard of. That's been torn to shreds by legal experts. he's a frickin' cop, and this was a kid. You don't need to shoot a kid. There is non-lethal force available, and if you go to lethal force, you need to be able to answer for that, and there needs to be somebody who can put you behind bars if it was, in fact, homicide.
Fucking hell.
There seriously needs to be change here. This is the United States of America. This is a nation of laws. And no one should be above the law. Frickin' cops shouldn't be above the law. The Catholic Church, and we'll get into that in a little bit, should not be above the law. And, heck, senators, congressmen, who are, under the Constitution, immune to misdemeanor prosecutions while they're in office. Which I think they may be immune to even more than that. Let me double-check that one.
May or may not be immune, but get out of it anyway.
It's debated, but yeah, they do have some immunity. But yeah, like, goddamn Mormon Republican Mike Crapo from Idaho got a DUI. You commit a crime and you shouldn't keep serving in the Senate. God fucking damn.
I got no words for the stupid.
Yeah. But when it comes to those who either write or enforce the laws, falling under the law should be the most important and have the highest scrutiny. Because if you're writing or enforcing it and you can't even live up to it, how can you expect anybody else to? And when it comes to a case like what's going on in Ferguson, Missouri, I think anybody could live up to not shooting someone for being young and black.
This day in history, November 27th, the year 1095. I don't know why I said it the year of. Pope Urban II orders the first crusade. Yeah, awesome. So, Pope Urban II. Yeah, what a name. With a cry of Deus vult, or God wills it.
Urban II, did he like cities?
I'm figuring the first one, the one before him, he liked, well, at least suburbs. he starts two centuries of war in the Middle East. So, even better than Urban, he was actually born Odo of Lagari in 1042.
So, not to be Odo. Confused with the shapeshifter.
Right. My point. Urban was a protege of the Catholic Church reformer, Pope Gregory the VII. Like Gregory, he made internal reform his main focus, railing against simony, the selling of church offices, and other clerical abuses, which were really prevalent during the Middle Ages. That's definitely a good thing. But another thing Urban did when he was elected Pope in 1088 was applying his statecraft to weakening support for his rivals, notably Clement III. Yeah. When the end of November rolled around in the year 1095, good old Odo made perhaps the most influential speech of the Middle Ages. In it, he called for the rich and the poor to unite, and not really a simple thing even back then, in taking the Holy Land back from the Turkish Muslims. Muslims. Yeah. But yeah, what can I say? What a lovely man that was.
Well, to be fair, at this point, the Christian princes were all fighting against each other. Yeah. For example, the Normans had just conquered Britain, and they were surrounded by Muslims. Spain had been conquered. The Byzantines had already lost a lot of land to the Turks, and it was seriously looking like if the Christians didn't stop fighting against each other, the Muslims would take over all of Europe.
Even back then, the Holy Land was already called the Middle East, and he drummed up like between 60 and 100,000 people to basically march on Jerusalem. And not all of them did that because they were, just good, quote unquote good Christians, but, there was a lot of wealth and land to be gained over there in them thar hills. Shit, what can I say? The Christian peasants and even the nobility that were going to Jerusalem to fight in these crusades weren't really trained at all to be military men. And, well, the Muslims, just fucking gutted them, tore the shit out of all of them. And it was basically just sheer force of numbers, just throwing meat at a problem over and over that they were actually able to triumph at all. Interesting little side note. Urban died in 1099, 2 weeks after the fall of Jerusalem, but news traveled slow in that time, and he died before the news made it back to Europe.
Yeah.
I find that kind of hilarious.
Yeah, one thing that was kind of interesting with the Crusades was under Muslim rule, mm-hmm. Christians, Jews, and Muslims were all free to worship in Jerusalem and had safe passage on their pilgrimages.
They had to pay a tax as people, right?
They, as people of the book, but they still got to make their pilgrimage and worship. When the Crusaders arrived, they killed the indigenous Christians, Jews, and Muslims, and didn't let anybody but Christians worship in Jerusalem.
Kind of a dick thing.
Yeah.
Just saying. So Urban's was the first of seven major military campaigns fought over the next two centuries. And yeah, we totally still feel the effects of that shit today. Oh, and he was turned into a saint in 1881.
Because God wills it.
Well, somebody did. Oh, boy. Lovely, lovely.
Yeah. The Crusades. A really good movie, actually, on the Crusades is Kingdom of Heaven.
Isn't that the one with the Legolas?
Orlando Bloom.
Yeah, that's it.
Really good film.
Decent?
Yes, it actually, while the story of the movie is not historically accurate, the historical background is. They do a really good job of portraying what was going on during the Crusades, and it's especially good if you get the director's cut.
Oh.
Let me warn you, the regular version is 2.5 hours long. The director's cut is pushing, 3.5, 4 hours.
Wow.
But damn, it's good.
So the director just doesn't know how to fucking edit a movie.
It's a completely different story with the details that you get.
Hmm.
The opening bit in France is like four times as long.
And that's a good thing?
Oh, yeah. If you like this movie, it's a really good thing.
All right. I'll have to check the Netflix, see if there's a director's cut. If not, I won't download it, I promise.
One thing that is disappointing with it is all the filming was done in Morocco.
Okay.
Where
including the French scenes?
Well, all the Middle Eastern scenes are Morocco, where it's flat. The actual castles in the Middle East are far bigger than they appear in the movie, and the ground is nowhere near flat. Karak is so disappointing in the movie compared to the real thing.
Really?
Yeah. Karak Castle is amazing. It was built on top of a hill that has very, very steep sides that they paved, so you couldn't really climb up it. And the different layers of the castle are... Oh, man. It is... The spots to shoot your arrows out of... All red at people that would be trying to come up. It was... There was a reason that it was only conquered once. It's amazing. Even today, it is amazing. Out of all the places I've been, it is, I would say, my favorite.
Well, all right.
Yeah.
Shit. I would love to travel, but... all right. So, moving on along?
Yes, it was only captured twice. The first time by Salah ad-Din and the second time by Ibrahim Pasha of Egypt. In 1840.
This day in history, 1942. The French scuttle their own fleet. So, yeah, 1942. French Admiral Jean de Labadorde, whatever, sinks the French fleet anchored in Toulon Harbor off of the southern coast of France. And basically to keep it out of the Germans' hands. So, yeah, you might remember that in 1940, the German forces basically kicked the fuck out of France, and they established it was kind of like Germany South-ish.
Mm-hmm. Puppet.
It's kind of South, isn't it?
Yeah.
Germany, France, yeah. But, yeah, Germany won and occupied France, just plain and simple. And they had basically a puppet state, and they had like signed an armistice with Germany. And, you know, like that kind of made it be a little hands off, but, you know, the French still had their navy, but they weren't really allowed to use it. And, well, the British were a little, shall we say, scared that it might get commandeered at some point. And, well, they actually, held a 5-minute missile bombardment, the British did, and managed to sink one French cruiser and two old battleships. They also killed 1,200 French sailors. So, yet another reason there's some bad blood between the Brits and the French. That also really broke off the diplomatic relations with Great Britain. Go figure. 2 years later, though, the Germans, well, the armistice already violated, and that navy was starting to look pretty tasty to the Germans. So, luckily, the French, basically scuttled and sunk their own fleet. So that was, let's see, 2 battle cruisers, 4 heavy cruisers, 2 light cruisers, 1 aircraft transport, 30 destroyers, and 16 submarines.
And a partridge in a pear tree.
Fucking A, right? I mean, that's no small bit of metal there.
No.
Fuck. 3 French subs managed to escape the Germans and make it to Algiers and helped the Allied territory. But, 1 sub did fall into German hands. But, all in all, you know, victory? You know, at least they kept the shit out of the Germans' hands. So, I guess that's a good kind of... This day in history... The year 2005. All right. So there's this little 13-year-old girl, Elizabeth Brooks, whose father threw a $10 million bat mitzvah for her. David H. Brooks brought in a lot of quality musicians for the event. I'm not saying that Kenny G is quality, but he was there too. So like Don Henley, Stevie Nicks, Tom Petty, and even fucking Aerosmith. But the name that made me chuckle about all this so much more is Curtis 50 Cent Jackson, the former criminal turned rapper. Sure, his 2003 album, Get Rich or Die Trying, was a hit at the time, but this, but, you know, his image and the 9 bullets removed from his body just don't really mesh up well with a bar mitzvah. Curtis kvetched a while, but came around when a couple million bucks landed in his lap. Like any good, pathetically extravagant child's party, all the guests had been given gift bags containing upwards of $1,000 in personal electronics, including digital cameras that, 50 Cent's bodyguard reportedly tried and failed to stop guests from taking keepsake photos of the event. Within days, go figure, those photos traveled to social media and blogs, and along with thousands of snarky comments about 50 Cent's questionable gangsta credibility. Yeah, I thought that was kind of chuckle-worthy. But anyways, interesting side note, the father who spent that $10 million celebrating his daughter's coming of age was none other than defense contractor David H. Brooks, of course. The CEO of DHB Industries, a Long Island company that manufactured body armor for the U.S. States Marines and other branches. Yeah. Anyways, 2 years after the lavish event, Brooks was served with a 71-page federal indictment featuring charges of insider trading, tax evasion, and raiding his company's coffers for personal gain.
See, that was a case where a grand jury knew their job.
Yeah.
Give and the frickin' indictment.
That included the $10 million he used to pay for his daughter's lavish bat mitzvah.
Yeah, he eventually got sentenced to 17 years in prison, per the FBI.
That's like one of the few times any government contractor has ever been dealt with properly, or at least properly-ish.
Yeah. In September 2010, he was convicted on 14 counts of conspiracy, mail and wire fraud, securities fraud, obstruction of justice, lying to auditors, and he pled guilty to conspiracy to defraud the FBI and filing false income tax returns. He was fined $8.7 million and had to forfeit $65 million in profits. And as of the date of this press release in 2013 from the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Eastern District of New York, they would be determining within 90 days how much he had to pay to victims.
Victims, wow.
God damn.
Finally, so a little bit of justice.
This FBI.gov press release will be going in the show notes. But again, the grand jury knew their job.
Sounds like they did it pretty well, too.
Yeah. They indicted him. They let the federal judge actually make the decision. Oh, federal judge and or jury.
All right, moving on up.
It's now time for science and technology.
All right.
First off, we have Philae, the awesome little probe that could. Philae was launched from Rosetta after making it all the way to Comet 67P. They made their first attempt ever, the first time ever that humans have attempted this, to land something on a comet, and were successful.
It wasn't Bruce Willis.
No. The analogy used here is having two supersonic objects flying roughly in parallel after one's caught up with the other, and then shooting a bullet from one to the other.
Nice.
Granted, by supersonic, these were moving even faster. We're talking at something like 18 kilometers per second.
Nice. Okay.
Yeah.
Fairly fast then. All right.
Yeah. So anyway, Philae landed The harpoons it had to anchor it both failed.
Ouch.
I heard stories of other attempts to secure it failing. So it ended up bouncing a couple times, and it landed into a bit of a crevasse. They found that the comet was a lot harder than they expected. The quote here is that they found it to be a tough nut to crack.
Oh, no.
So, according to research team leader Tillman Sfon, although the power of the hammer was gradually increased, we were not able to go deep into the surface. But with the data they did get, they did find the evidence of organic molecules. It sniffed it. Gas analyzer sniffing the atmosphere.
So even though it bounced a couple of times and landed in a little shady crevasse, it's still able to work then. It didn't need just solar power.
It was able to work for a few days. It's now asleep.
All right.
Yeah. The battery's drained, and it's now in standby, hoping that it will move as the comet continues to hurtle towards the sun, move just enough that the lander will get some sunlight on its solar panels and return to life and continue doing fucking amazing science. Humans shot this thing onto a comet that was hurtling towards the sun. This is so frickin' amazing. We can shoot stuff at comets. We can't indict a cop, though. scientists at CERN, continuing to pore over data from the Large Hadron Collider, which is currently turned off for upgrades and repairs and the like, have managed to identify two additional new subatomic particles that were predicted in under the standard model from the baryon family. Xi_B- and Xi_B*-.
Yeah.
They were, the mass on these were so close to the sum of the decay products. To quote Matthew Charles from CERN, the Xi_B- is very close in mass to the sum of the decay products. If it had been just a little lighter, we wouldn't have seen it at all using the decay signature that we were looking for. And so these were both predicted to exist, but had never been seen, in spite of related particles being found previously. And so now they have been found. And if any of our listeners know how to pronounce Xi_B-, please leave us a voicemail message telling us.
So wait, science makes predictions and then found out that those predictions were true.
Yes.
Awesome. Yes. Science.
That is what science does. You know what religion does?
Not that.
It makes predictions that are so incredibly vague that it will be guaranteed to be true. And then it will happen over and over again because it has happened for as long as there have been people making stuff like that happen.
Hmm. Kind of like rabbits chewing their cud.
That was descriptive, not predictive. you know, kind of like the prediction that there will be wars and rumors of war.
Oh, that hurts.
When has there not been wars or rumors of war? You know, science goes with very specific predictions, like there will be a subatomic particle at this particular decay signature.
Oh, wait, there it is.
And there it is, yeah. In Peru, some researchers from the Johns Hopkins University have found that the height of children has been negatively impacted by El Nino. 17 years ago, there was a very severe El Nino event. We're talking about 1997 to 98, which brought 16 times more rain than usual in coastal Peru. These floods cut off access to roads, isolated some rural villages, devastated crops, contaminated water tables, really just ruined everything. And what they found with this, looking at more than 2,000 children between the age of 7 and 17, is that the previous trend of children being on average 6/10 of a centimeter taller than children the same age when measured at 10 years of age,
yeah,
they were decreasing on average 0.3 centimeters in height.
Hmm.
So it was viewed as, you know, better access to food with a growing economy, better public health was causing kids to be able to grow taller quicker. And, you know, 0.6 centimeters increase in height every year for children of the same age. That's pretty freaking amazing.
Ain't bad.
And then that just turns around with a massive flooding event. It just devastated the area. The decreased food spread a disease like diarrhea and malaria. And they're using this to show that the importance of accurate, precise, and well-communicated El Nino predictions, which about 75% of the time are accurate. They were predicting an extremely severe El Nino this year. Hasn't happened yet. But most of the time they're right. And with those better predictions, you know, they need to be taking it seriously and make measures to protect people from the ill effects. This publication of this article is still pending. So it was New Scientist reporting on it. One thing I was kind of disappointed to see is they found this effect lasted for about 3 years after the El Nino. Children born 3 years after the El Nino.
Hmm.
So it sounds like it had to do with maternal conditions in utero, but they don't say that in the article. Because if they were only looking at kids up to 17 years of age, now granted, they were doing this study, you know, 5 years ago. Most of the snapshot you're going to be getting is going to be kids that were born during or after the El Nino. So I'd be really interested to know what the maternal health side of this, how that plays in. All right. Moving along, it's time for politics and religion. I really hate it that Idaho keeps coming up in the news that we cover. But anyway, there was a transgender woman in Boise, Jennifer Gable, worked at a local Wells Fargo bank, and she died October 9, 32 years of age, from an aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
She had legally changed her name from Jeff in 2007. Her friends recently have known her as a woman, and her funeral addressed her as Jeff, referred to her as him, and cut her hair short and dressed her in a suit.
This is so fucked up on so many levels. And yeah, sorry, it's Idaho again.
Yeah. Her friend, Naomi Sweetfield, from who knew her growing up in Twin Falls, said they never mentioned once Jennifer. They never spoke any of that. The obituary published in Twin Falls identified her as Jeff, referred to her using male pronouns, and showed pictures from when she presented as a man. This very much appears to be a case of her father wanting her to be remembered as him.
That is just a holy shit smack in the face.
Yeah. The death certificate listed her as Jeffrey, a.k.a. Jennifer Gable. I'm sorry, but her name was legally changed.
Even if it was a case of a.k.a., it would totally be the other way around.
Yeah. I would say that would be not necessary, but more understandable.
If you have the birth certificate right next to the death certificate, I suppose. But there's a lot of legal paperwork in between those two.
Yeah, and there's a lot of people that change their names.
Holy shit.
Especially women who change their last names frequently. So it's not like our society can't handle people having one name when they're born and one name when they die.
Yeah, this is fucking painful.
Yeah.
The funeral director quote from him, "I did what was legally bound to do by my client." Park said he didn't want to be quoted any further, except that his business had honored the wishes of the next of kin. Where do the wishes of the dead come in?
Mm-hmm.
Holy shit.
The obituary said Gable grew up as a member of the Twin Falls First Christian Church and was baptized in 1996. She attended Morningside Elementary School and O'Leary Junior High and graduated from Twin Falls High School in 2000. Gable married Ann Arthurs in 2005 in Hawaii. They later divorced. That's all ancient history. Mm-hmm. What about Jennifer's, who she was, how she lived?
Yeah, I mean, this isn't a recent thing. She'd been transitioning to a female identity for several years.
Mm-hmm.
So, nothing new. I'm sure her parents were well aware of this.
Yeah.
Holy shit. Granted, I know funerals are for everybody else, but you know what? The dead should have a say in that shit, too.
Yeah, I'm the backup executor for my mom's estate. After my dad, and I have, and we'll probably need to repeat this discussion a few times, especially when she becomes, you know, it's looking like the end is nearing, about what she wants for her funeral. The discussions we've had before, it's been whatever we want. Well, okay, her kids range from AA religious to atheist. And honestly, I would be perfectly fine coordinating the planning and conduction of an Adventist funeral for my Adventist mom.
It's her wishes.
If that's what she wants, because that's who she is.
Yeah.
And it should be a lot. There's a part of it where it needs to be. Now, granted, I would request of whoever conducted the funeral to not proselytize, because I think that's a dick move to do.
Oh, hell yeah.
But if it's a religious person, having a religious funeral is not a problem. If it's a atheist, no matter how religious the family is, you shouldn't force a Christian funeral on the memory of somebody who that wasn't them.
And just plain and simple, fucking square peg, round hole.
Yeah. And doing a funeral for a man when it was a woman who died, that's just
fucked up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at the headline from the Idaho Statesman. Friends say Idaho transgender woman's memory not honored at funeral. Pure and simple. Her now, family might as well have pissed on her grave.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd give you that.
One of her friends from growing up said, "I noticed she was starting to change in recent months. She was getting a little happier. She reminded me of a caterpillar who entered a cocoon. She was like a butterfly. She was flying high." And they pissed on her grave. Fucking A. And the fact they put in such historical data as the church she grew up in and when she was baptized as a child tells me there was a religious bent in this whole assholery.
Oh, sure. Fuck.
So next we've got a strange story of demon possession and the Philippines.
Only a month too late.
But. So there were these students at a public school in Cebu City in the Philippines who, looking from the pictures, they look quite young. They begin to, a large number of them begin to express some surprising symptoms. Around 3 p.m. last Thursday, 35 students from various grade levels collapsed and had convulsions. So,
nice, okay.
Yeah, Mary was possessed by a spirit named Jake, who spoke to her. Her sister, who was in fourth grade, was possessed by a spirit named Maria. Their mom believes this possession occurred after the school cut down two mango trees.
Oh, I've heard of those mangoes.
Uh-huh. Must have been housing the demons or something. And this is the first time that possession has happened at the school.
Hmm.
So what did they do? Well, the teachers got the help of the local officials. And the local officials called in the priests
I was with you until then.
Mary Help of Christians Parish and the Reverend Nicholas Ramos arrived, and he is educated in how to do exorcism.
Right.
And so he had the students brought to his church where he'd pray over them. He sprayed them with holy salt and water, and some of them responded violently. They called in a well-known exorcist, the Monsignor Frederick Krikenbeck, who conducted the rite of deliverance. Some responded to the prayer, and then they returned to their homes. Once they thought it was all over, four more students started screaming, convulsing, just before Mass was going to be celebrated at the school. And then the actual Cebu City Disaster Risk Reduction and Management Council arrived, took a look, and they educated the teachers and parents on what to do when you have a case of mass hysteria.
I think they're still going about this the whole wrong way. I mean, do it like Jesus did. Get a herd of pigs and then cast the demons into the pigs and kill the pigs. You know, they missed that step. The demons went straight back into the kids.
Well, but see, in that case, Jesus only was dealing with one person who had a legion of demons.
Didn't they say, my name is Legion?
My name is Legion, for we are many.
Okay. I've always had weird thoughts on that.
Yeah. It's a weird story. I've actually been on that hill where that's supposed to have happened.
Crikey.
It's a long frickin' way down to the water. A really long way.
I always thought they said it was something like they drove them over a cliff into the water.
It's not really a cliff. No. It's a steep hill.
Okay.
And then more steep hill, and then more steep hill until you're finally down to the water, like 1,500 feet and 2 miles away.
Holy shit. All right.
Yeah. Anyway, but in this case, mass hysteria is something that has been well documented. It is relatively well understood as being a case of the nocebo effect, the opposite of the placebo, where your mind expects bad things to happen, so it makes bad things happen, such as why people think they can't eat gluten when they don't have celiac disease or an actual allergy.
Or why once one person starts speaking in tongues, they all do.
Mm-hmm. And so with this mass hysteria, and what's interesting is it is most prevalent in children versus adults and in girls versus boys. And at least with the pictures they show, those are young girls. One got bruised.
Fucking looks like cuts on her head.
By a crucifix that was pressed into her forehead.
Oh. The fucking priest did it. All right.
Yeah. So kids start experiencing mass hysteria. They are highly susceptible. One starts having a realistic scenario here would be one legitimately got sick, food poisoning or some bug, bad water, who knows, threw up. Or maybe the kid had epilepsy and had a seizure, and then everybody's like, oh, it's demons, and they start expressing the same symptoms. The best treatment, and you can take, I've got the link to the How Stuff Works article on collective hysteria, aka mass psychosomatic reaction, or mass psychogenetic disorder. It's got a lot of names. Seems that people tend to respond when they go home. When the kids just go home from school, it goes away.
Oh, wait, when they aren't around all the other kids that are emulating and mirroring themselves?
Yeah. It could also very easily go away when you tell them they're cured. Like when you command the demon to leave the body.
Okay.
One of those things where demon possession only seems to happen with people who think demon possession can happen. When you don't really believe in that shit, like in the U.S.,
it happens a lot less.
You get it in weird little subsets, very conservative fringe groups or fringe elements of conservative groups. And, you know, in most of those cases, I would say it's probably mental illness is the real key there.
Yeah, for most of them.
Yeah. So in Nome, Alaska, they're having a bit of a budget shortfall.
Right. Okay.
And so they're debating options on how to fix it. And one of the options they're looking at is taxing churches and other nonprofits.
Well, we do.
Which could bring in $300,000 a year. For that little town of 4,000, that's what I was thinking.
It must be a small town.
Yeah.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Quoting City Council member Matt Culley, you get rid of the sales tax exemption. Most of the time, these other exemptions aren't given. We're a very nice city to do it. When we sit down at budget time with the numbers to look at it, if we want to donate that money back to nonprofits, the money can all go back in. But we have control over it now as opposed to going whatever direction that we have it going now. So the plan is take that away, and if the budget's looking good, refund the money back to the nonprofit organizations. I would say a better plan would be if it's the budget's looking good, give it to the schools.
Yeah. Or, you know, if schools first, then the roads, because I'm sure the roads get torn up pretty good up there. Yeah, but
buy the cops first. Some new snowmobiles.
Buy the cops a fucking moose. I'm sure they don't have a really large crime rate up there.
Some snowmobiles, a couple quads. Yeah, they'll be good.
Yeah. I do like this one line that I see here at the bottom. Estimates vary, but studies show exempting religion from taxes in America costs the taxpayers between $71 billion and $83.5 billion every year. America's entire food stamp program costs just about that much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could essentially wipe the food stamp program off of the books just by taxing churches. Ooh, boy.
Well, that would drive the books,
that would drive
funded.
Well, it would negate it completely.
Yeah.
Boy, that would drive Republicans twice crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Taxing churches and still funding food stamps.
Yeah.
Because go figure, poor people need to eat too. Ha ha.
Yeah. All right. Holy. Now moving from somebody actually thinking to somebody who should know better.
To the fucking page that keeps throwing up fucking sound ads on me.
Neurosurgeon Ben Carson, who...
I'm sorry. Did you say idiot Ben Carson?
I said neurosurgeon.
All right.
As
I like my version better.
When it comes to neurosurgery, he is very skilled and quite brilliant.
Right.
He was the director of the... neurosurgery director at Johns Hopkins Children's Center, after all. He was very, very good at that.
Okay.
Last few years, he's gone off the deep end and decided to play around in politics. He's a doctor, Jim, not a politician.
Not a bricklayer.
But he's feeling God's fingers gently touching him towards a 2016 presidential run.
I don't want to hear him talking about anybody's fingers anywhere.
And what really gets me, he's an Adventist.
Hmm.
He's an Adventist who, along with much of the Adventist church in recent years, has been moving from the Democratic Party to the Republican Party. Mm. He has gone full on crazy right wing, which is kind of surprising for being a black Adventist. And he's gotten in bed with evangelicals, including doing a national profile story for the 700 Club.
Wow. That seems sort of blasphemous to me for an Adventist to be doing the 700 Club.
I would say he is definitely acting like a very bad Adventist.
Hmm.
And,
scripturally, do you see any way he could be heading that supports him along the Adventist lines? Or do you think he's just getting caught up in the money and the fame?
No, I think he's just going with the money and the fame.
All right.
And, you know, I've been trying to ignore stories about him because he's a doctor. He's got no power. He's has no chance of winning, but it's starting to sound like he's actually got a decent chance. The Values Voters Summit. He came in second place behind Ted Cruz.
Oh, fuck. Lesser of two evils, which would you pick if it was just Republicans?
Oh.
Right?
Oh.
That makes my brain hurt. I mean, sure, you want to ask a neurosurgeon about neurosurgeon shit? Perfect. I'm not going to ask him, like, how to fucking...
run a country?
How to do anything other than neurosurgery.
Yeah. He has zero qualification for presidential office. Well, aside from being over 35 and a natural-born U.S. citizen.
Okay, there is that. I mean, he's got that over Cruz.
Yeah.
But I mean, at least Obama is a centrist, right-leaning American that actually got a... He was a constitutional lawyer, for fuck's sake, wasn't he?
He served in the... Yeah, and then he served in the Illinois State Senate and then the U.S. Senate. He had government experience. Carson has...
A medical degree.
Yeah.
A doctorate in...
He can cut open a kid's brain and put it back together again. That's a lot
different.
Apparently
really well.
He was a director of a department at a major hospital. So who knows? Maybe he has a little bit of budget experience. It's a little different budgeting for a department at a hospital versus the freaking largest economy in the world. He has no experience with international affairs. Aside from the likelihood of going along on a few share him evangelistic series, just guessing here with his Adventistism, with his Adventist status, especially the conservative Adventists really like share him. It was one of their trips where I called it quits midway through. Yeah. And he feels God nudging him over.
I wonder where he feels God nudging him. Yeah, I'm going for all the dirty tonight, sorry.
Yeah. If he starts feeling a tickling in the prostate, he might want to be looking at Cruz instead of God.
Oh, Or at least his boyfriend.
Mr. Bachman. All right, so at the Vatican, Pope Frankie has recently appointed the Reverend Robert J. Geisinger to the office of promoter of justice.
Right.
Basically the chief prosecutor for church law.
Oh, wait. So this isn't a fake office or something they're just starting?
No. This is something that's been there. So his job is to take care of things like priests that are abusing their office or fucking children.
Right. Well, so again, are you sure this wasn't just made up now?
Yeah, this is a real thing that the Pope has said that he's going to start taking seriously by promoting to this office Geisinger, who was the second highest ranking Chicago Jesuit in the 90s when they were facing multiple complaints against Donald J. McGuire, who had diddled quite a few children and is currently in prison for two of those children that he had his way with.
But he did have, like, many influential supporters and lovers of him, including, well, Mother Teresa.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Geisinger knew of this.
So I'm sure he's not all bad.
As early as 1995, and he advised into how to discipline McGuire as late as 2002. It wasn't until 2006 that McGuire was imprisoned for 25 years.
No thanks to the Catholic Church, it seems.
No.
Okay.
Geisinger did not turn this over to the civil authorities. He did not advise them to remove him from access to children.
Well, I'm sure Geisinger said he wouldn't do it again.
He probably advised them to have him say some Hail Marys and maybe flagellate himself and then not do it again. And now the Pope, who is supposed to be so much better than the last guy, who has said he's going to be taking this whole child-fucking thing seriously, is putting Pope somebody Frank's? Who's very experienced in shielding child molesting priest in charge of prosecuting child molesting priest. Of course, one thing he has going for him is he apparently has an idea that the Catholic Church is above the law. Just like the Fort Wayne South Bend diocese, who is claiming that under constitutional First Amendment freedom of religion, they are free to hire and fire at will, and that they can't be put to a trial.
Not that one.
Yeah. To quote, if the DOC is required to go through a trial, it would irrevocably deny them the benefits of religious protection.
Yeah, so those motherfuckers didn't even show up to the trial.
Yeah. They're being sued for firing a teacher who got in vitro fertilization.
Right.
For getting in vitro fertilization.
Yeah.
So she's suing them for unlawful termination and, you know, being discriminatory in how they fired her. One Monsignor labeled her a grave immoral sinner, since, you know, the Catholic Church is so frickin' pro-family.
Well, only natural families.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They want you to have as many children as you possibly can. Naturally. Yeah, so per the, per Brian Haas, a staff attorney with the ACLU, what the DOC is saying, we can fire anyone and we have absolute immunity from even going to trial as long as we think they're violating our religion. And to have civil authorities even look into what we're doing is a violation. It's astonishing.
Yes, it is astonishing. Boy, that guy has some fucking balls on him.
Yeah. Yeah, I was a manager for a number of years. I had to deal with HR quite a bit. I was involved in a number of terminations and unemployment hearings and the like. Learned a bit along the way, including you can fire people if you have cause. In some cases, okay, you can fire them without cause. And you just need to be consistent. So the case here, if they fired her for violating their religious beliefs, which, as a religious organization, they are free to do. They just need to make sure they're consistent with their policies. And that is the role of courts when somebody says they're not playing fair to look into that. Because you can have some pretty batshit crazy rules like no in vitro fertilization if you work for us, but you have to make sure you're applying that evenly, i.e. everyone who employs in vitro fertilization.
I.e. applied to guys, too.
Yes.
For, yes, like, sexual fertilization techniques for guys, mm-hmm, also.
Yeah. But the Catholic Church, and perhaps the selection they had for their chief prosecutor was right in line with what they view, that it is still the Middle Ages, where they are still independent of the state and a law to themselves. And moving across the border from Indiana up to Michigan, there's a woman who heard on the Drudge Report that there was going to be Muslim prayers at the National Cathedral.
Oh,
and
no.
God prompted her to go and protest it.
Okay.
So she drove from Michigan to Washington, D.C. in the SUV she lives in.
That's only because her family kicked her out for being fucking crazy.
Yeah,
which,
yeah,
is bad because they should have got her help, but
she walked, sorry, in, managed to get through security, and she yelled, "Jesus Christ is on the cross over there. Get out of our church. Leave our church alone."
Yeah.
This was at a service where the South African ambassador, a Muslim, gave the sermon, and he was joined by the National Cathedral's Reverend Canon Gina Campbell. The Washington National Cathedral is an Episcopalian church that is officially open to all people of all faiths. That would include Muslims. Now, I am surprised that Muslims would want to offer prayers in a place filled with idolatry.
Hmm. Yeah, but it's just trying to do the hands across borders, kind of touchy-feely bullshit.
Yeah.
So, in a way, that's a good thing. This woman is still... I'm trying to find it. This is the same woman from a few months ago. This is worth finding. It's on Friendly Atheist. They don't even give her name, do they?
Let me look. Got a picture of her. Christine Weick. W-E-I-C-K. That's in the Raw Story article. She's quoted by Reuters as saying, "I didn't do it for myself. I did it for the Lord."
Ah. Yeah, so Christine Weick is born-again Christian protester. This is also the same woman who back in May of 2014, Mother's Day, in fact, protested against gay marriage. She stood at the busy intersection of Granville, Michigan, and displayed a sign that read, "Thank your mom today for not being gay."
Oh.
Yeah. Soon counter-protesters showed up with competing signs, which read, "Thank your mom if you're not a bigot." "Fuck her," and "But two moms can be fabulous." Yeah. This woman needs fucking help.
Yeah. She was disowned by her family. Her husband divorced her last year over a spiritual conflict, and she felt that she got the encouragement she needed when there was a woman stepping out of her vehicle on the side of the road, clapping and giving her two thumbs up. What she said was, "That's the strangest thing. The first thing that went through my mind was, that's confirmation right there. That's all I needed. From that point on, this was something I'm going to do. That was the catapult to move me, that moved me to keep going towards Washington." More likely, yeah. This woman pulled over on the side of the road, getting out of her vehicle, giving her two thumbs up, and waving her arms around, was trying to get her attention to stop and help.
No, it must have been a sign from God. Mysterious ways and all that.
Yeah.
Crazy woman needs fucking help.
Yeah. All right, so finally, we talked a while back about a ex-Marine from Maryland who was... banished from his daughter's high school for his objections to the history class that included an assignment about Islam.
Wait, there's religions other than Christianity?
He's now suing the school district.
Okay. Idiot man-child is idiot man-child. Yeah.
So, from the statement from the conservative Christian Thomas More Law Center, the school's actions not only dishonored John Wood's service, but the service of all men and women in our armed forces who defended our nation from Islamic violence.
I wonder if they were laughing when they wrote that.
Yeah. They claim that the girl was required to affirm that there is no God but Allah.
What? Wow. So that was part of her assignment, was to denounce her religion and convert.
This was all Islamic indoctrination. And you know what one of the most egregious things with it was?
What?
They were teaching this class,
yeah,
that Islam, Muslims worship the same God as Christians and Jews.
Yeah, pretty much.
Uh huh. Which is,
I mean, kind of like Christine Weick, that, you know, their God has like personality disorders, but yeah, same God.
Yeah, these are all Abrahamic faiths.
Yeah,
they are all. You know, Christianity is based off of Judaism with some major tweaks, borrowed from the Greeks and Egyptians and pulled out of Paul's and a few other people's asses. And Islam is based off of Judaism and Christianity and local pagan religions and a bunch of details pulled out of Muhammad and a bunch of other people's asses. But they all are worshiping the same one God, except for the Christians, which have the other two along with them.
Well, Catholics, you're saying?
Yeah, all Trinitarian Christians have the three gods.
I suppose so, but I don't know. They always try to make it sound like it's the one, except for the Catholics. And then they throw in Mary for good measure, too.
Yeah.
It's still, fuck.
Yeah.
Come on. Nobody fucking rolled out a fucking prayer mat and told her that way to Mecca, fucking pray. Okay. Yet another guy. Needs some medical help.
Yep.
Psychological help.
Let's try to fix the VA so this guy can get the help he needs.
Right, yeah.
He's a veteran. He needs our help because he's obviously disturbed.
Before he maybe does something dangerous. I mean, this guy's got some fucking issues.
Yeah. And if you look at the stats, there's a lot of veterans that have a lot of issues and they aren't getting the help they need.
Oh, fucking A.
We have fucked them up and we need to help them. We owe that to them. This guy may not believe he has a problem. He clearly does. Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to feedback. It was a pretty quiet week, since we only do feedback every other week. But from @JSeths, @AliAmajadRizvi, listened to AtheistNomads.com, episode 69 today. Superb. Thanks, @AtheistNomads.
You're welcome, JSeths.
Yes, we're glad you liked it. Keep on listening.
Listen some more.
If you have feedback for us, you can email us at contact@atheistnomads.com. You can call us at 541-203-0666. Tweet us @atheistnomads, like Jay Seths did. Or head on over to Facebook and send us a message or leave a comment there. Or a comment on this episode show notes on the website atheistnomads.com/70. And we got a new supporter. Well, yay. We got a supporter. She's back. Sally.
Sally?
At a level that I don't have a name for yet. So for now, I'm going to call it Super Patron. It's sure. Pretty damn close to Antimatter sponsor.
That sounds awesome. Holy shit. Sally, thank you. Sally?
Anyway, if you want to thank us, this is Thanksgiving after all. You're probably going to be listening Black Friday or a little bit after. With all that shopping, Amazon Prime would come in handy for free 2-day shipping. You can get a free trial that will get you through the holiday season. And if you find you like it, you can just stick on with it. Check out the link on our website. It's on the right-hand side of the page, down just a little bit past the click-through. They can take you through to shopping, and we get a little cut. So this time of year, be sure to hit up those Cyber Monday deals. They are well worth it.
Since this is the season of thanks and all, I want to give a quick run through. Thank you to Travis, Renee, Russ, Jason, Virginia, Mark, Vernware, Gary from Idaho, Mark, the Flying Skeptic, and Kevin for all the support that you give us. It's really appreciated.
You guys rock.
Fucking A.
And thank you to all of you listening. We wouldn't do this show without our listeners. And definitely. We love each and every one of you.
It's a podcast, but there's a tear. Just saying. All right, man.
Thank you for listening to another episode of Atheist Nomads. You can find us online at www.atheistnomads.com. Contact us at contact@atheistnomads.com or leave us a voicemail message at 541-203-0666. You can also like us on Facebook or leave us a review on iTunes, Zune, or wherever else you find the podcast. Until next time, this has been the Atheist Nomads.